session number 10046, reel number 4.
Mr. Roger, reel 4. You were just saying that you were about to march off and that he misinterpreted.
Marshal Tito misinterpreted what we were doing. We were going to give him a salute and then we were going to form a hollow square for him to give us his speech, but he thought we were marching off and he started shouting off in Yugoslav. Anyway, everything was sorted out and he gave us his speech and what have you. And
were you able to understand it?
Very little of it, really, only Dravo, Dzugis and one or two other things which had become commonplace talk amongst the commando. And
did he have much of a bodyguard?
Oh, he was surrounded by the jeeps. I think there's two jeeps in front of him, two behind him, and they had Smizers, all sorts of submachine guns and everything all over the place. But he was quite an impressive fellow, really.
What was impressive about him then?
His face.
What was special about his face?
Well, it could have been cut out of granite, really. He was obviously a leader. And I thought we were quite honoured to be the first troops, British troops, to be inspected by Tito. And
did the partisans show deference to him?
Oh yes, the partisans really thought he was good. I mean, I don't know whether you know any of the partisan songs, but they sing a lot about the war now, even now. I've been to Yugoslav twice. I went to Yugoslav for the 3 years ago I went, and 2 years ago, and we went there for VE Day, and we went to Vis, we returned to Vis, and the way the people welcomed us was amazing, really, because they everything was laid out on the quay at Viz itself, and they make special cakes and things for friends who come, and they lay all the wine and all the rakia and stuff on for these visits, and the band played It's a Long Way to Tipperary. And I can remember the band playing It's a Long Way to Tipperary when we arrived in Camisa in 1944. The band played on the quay then, It's a Long Way to Tipperary. And these people welcome us now. Luke and us are good friends. Still.
What was the attitude of the Yugoslavs towards the Germans at that time in the war?
Oh, they hated the Germans. As a matter of fact, there used to be an island just off of Viz where any Germans captured by the partisans was taken. You used to see these people go onto the island, but we never saw them come off. I mean, it's just a little island off Viz. Any prisoners taken by us were taken back to Italy, you know, automatically. As a matter of fact, I've got a receipt to show you for 17 live bodies, German POWs received them.
In good condition.
In good condition, yeah.
Were they taking many German prisoners?
Well, they were capturing a few here and there on the islands, you know.
But they just killed all the ones they got, did they?
I wouldn't say they killed them all. But I mean, they used to take them to this island, and that was as far as we knew what happened.
What happened to you after this?
After this, we went back to Italy. And we ended up at a place, a camp called Monopoly, on July the 16th. And we started training then with the HLI. This was for an operation in Albania called Spilje. And this was just planned, and all we knew, all we saw were models and things of it laid out. And it was just an harassing job, really, for the commando. And it was to destroy the garrison of Himara.
How do you spell that?
Himara, near the town of Spilje, Spilje, in Albania. The garrison there was guarding a main supply route, and it proved to be a tough proposition. We landed on the 29th of July and moved up under cover of darkness. But they didn't seem surprised to see us, and despite this, the support of heavy naval gunfire and RAF fighter bombers, the guns of the RSR, they could only be dislodged by determined frontal attacks. And this we did by leapfrogging up, each troop leapfrogging up, and then we went in over the top. But we had to withdraw, but not before the town of Spilje had been entered, and the German forces so disorganised and depleted that it was more or less a victory for us. And we just withdrew then from Spilje. I'm just checking on these for the dates, really. As I say, are you ready?
Yes.
Casualties at Spilje were fairly high, and we had a visit from Colonel Charles Vaughan, who inspected the unit. Charles Vaughan, of course, was in charge of the commando training school at Acne Carry. And our CO, of course, Major Friend, had been promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. And we had a party for this at the grotto in Poligano. Poliginano. We had a pleasant time. And during that time, we were at a place called Boteto. And our CO Colonel Finn, was married. And we, when they were married, they came out of church and they had a jeep. I don't think his wife cared very much for this, really, but we had a jeep and it was fixed up with smoke bombs, and we towed it through Barry when he was married in Barry.
Did she seem rather disapproving about it?
I don't think she was too. The jeep didn't make the grade. the horseless carriage towed by a second guard of honour and led by the pipes. Even in this time, though, I mean, plans were being made for us, and it was decided that we should put in attack at Sarandi.
Where's that?
Albania. S-A-R-A-N-D-E.
Was this also an attack on a German garrison?
This was an attack on a German garrison, yes. Apparently, there was two guns that covered the straits from Sarandi to Corfu and that. And for some unknown reason, they decided that we should cause a nuisance raid and attack this. And we arrived there equipped for 24 hours. And we'd had a recce party who'd landed there previously, Captain Alec Parsons, and they'd been attacked by the Germans and nearly put in the bag. Anyway, to cap it all, it started to rain. And we had to move into the high ground up the mountains, about 2,000 feet, and it was rained and rained and rained. And it rained for roughly nearly 4 weeks, continuous.
Which month was this?
I'm trying to fathom the date now. That's why I was looking at this to see the date.
In the autumn?
Oh, it was autumn. It was, however, on the 7th, it says... I've looked it up and it was in October. And it was... For days and days we patrolled around these mountains, and it was so bad that so many men had trench feet that we'd lost umpteen people who were so ill with trench feet they couldn't walk or do anything. Anyway, on the 7th and 8th of October, we began to move up for the attack on the garrison of Sarandi, carrying ammunition and stores required over the mountain tracks. And about 3:15 on October the 9th, the leading troops began to advance. And by 10:15, our final objective, a battery of captured British 25-pounders on a fortress hill, was secured. The Royal Marines, in a magnificent battle, cleared Sarandi, and the job was virtually done. But it was so bad with the mules. We had mules on the mountain, and Ken McAllister, our sergeant major, had one, and he was so fed up with it, he pushed it over the bloody side of the mountain because it was so stubborn. It was murder going up these mountains with these mules. And the weather was so wet, and people were so down that we used to toss up. There was McAllister, our sergeant major, myself, Len Perkins. And we used to toss a coin at night, who slept in the middle, because the blankets were all wet, but the bloke in the middle got the heat from the bodies on the outside. It was so bad. And it was wicked. It was really bad. And anyway, here again, we came out on top, and we cleared the jerrys out of there. And then they sent a party across to Corfu, clear Corfu.
Were you on that?
I wasn't on that, no, but some of my troop went on it. I didn't go on it. I didn't go on Corfu. But they cleared out Corfu, and they were welcomed by these people there, and they thought they were not men but angels sent from heaven when they took over Corfu.
What did you make of the Albanians as compared with the Yugoslavs?
Oh, I think they pinched the bloody harness off a nightmare. You don't leave anything hanging about because it was gone. I mean, don't forget, we're in the open all this time. There's no tents or anything. You're living the best way you can live. And one particular incident, we held this valley while the weather was so bad. We had to hold this valley. And my troop was at the end of the valley. My section was at the end of the valley. And we did a fighting patrol out one night. And went for about 3 miles up the road and contacted nothing at all, you know. It was so bad. The weather was terrible. But as I'd moved out with this patrol, I'd gone along the ditch and I came across a jerry. And he'd been laid there so long he smelled rather a bit and he was bloated. And when we'd done and finished the fighting patrol, we came back in and we had to dig in at the mouth of the valley. And the stench from this jerry was wafting a bit. And I eventually ended up by getting a 4-gallon can of petrol and pouring it all over him and burning him prematurely. And anyway, as I say, the job in Sarandi was completed. And
could I ask you a general question about your attitude towards the Germans as an enemy? What was your estimate of them as an enemy?
As an enemy, very good. Particularly Hermann Göring paratroop division were very, very strong fighting men. But a German, when he's on top, there's nothing more... what's the word? There's no German more arrogant than when... there's no German...
No person.
No person more arrogant than a German when he's on top. And yet, when he's down below, he's a bit below par. But he's an arrogant. They're arrogant. People in this world forgive the Germans now. But I think if you look back at the conditions that they, and the way they treated the Jews in these camps like Buchenwald and all these other, I don't think they can ever be forgiven, because it's no use saying that people didn't know. They must have known.
What was so good about the German soldier as a soldier?
Well, discipline. Do you know what they said? Napoleon said, give me a French officer, a German NCO and a British Tommy, and I'll lick the world. This is true.
So you thought that their strength lay in their NCOs?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I told you about bringing these prisoners of war back to Barry from Viz. And when they fell in to be marched off, he was only a little bloke, the NCO, but by God, he knocked him into shape, in line and everything, before they marched off. You know, fantastic.
Was there any sense in which you thought their discipline might be too excessive from their own point of view?
Not really, because I think discipline is what's lacking in this country at the present moment. There's no discipline.
But some people have said about the Germans that they're too predictable. They were too predictable as soldiers. Did you find that?
No, I don't agree with that. No. Lots of people say this, but I don't think so. Because you never knew what they were going to do next. Well, I never did.
Did your experiences in Albania finish your active service?
Oh, no. No. I've got quite a few more jobs I went on, you know. And...
Where were they?
Well, we did the Spit at Lake Camacho.
When would that have been about?
Let me see now. I can't quite remember the dates of this. You were on this, yeah?
Was this still in 1944?
Oh no, 45 this.
Which unit took part in it?
Full commando, the full brigade, 9 commando, 2, 40 and 43, marine commando.
And whereabouts is Lake Camacho?
It's on the northern Italy, on the western coast.
And what was the objective of the raid?
Well, it's a spit. Lake Camacho is a huge lake and there's all marshlands around it. But there's a main spit that runs up between that and the sea. And they apparently wanted to keep this spit clear so as we could bring our attack up that line, the main attack up that lane.
So you had to capture the spit, did you?
Well... We were to clear the Germans off the spit of land between Lake Camacho and the Adriatic and thus secure the right flank for the big attack which was to follow. But to tell you the truth about it, we ate more stags than soft mick because they surveyed the lake, or somebody surveyed the lake, and we were going to do a landing from the lake by boats with an outboard motor. Anyway, we were moved up in what they call fantails on this marshy land until they got stuck.
What's a fantail?
It's like a Bren carrier, only with crawlers, and it just carries troops. It's not armoured or anything like that. Like a duck. And we were to move so far up and then get from these fantails into these boats. And we moved up into position. And the stonk was to start, I think the stonk was to start at 10 o'clock. And we were to get the boats in the water and get across the lake, which in the middle of the lake was what was it called? An Argenta, wasn't it? An Argina. Like a path. Camacho was noted for eels, actually. Lake Camacho was noted for eels. And you had to get so far across this and then over the top and on the other side to land. And when we got out the fantails and we got to the boats, everybody got in the various boats. This was number 2 and number 9 were attacking from the lake. 40 or 43 were attacking from the sea and one was attacking up the spit. And we got into these boats. And when we come to try and start the outboard motors, well, the weight of the troops in the boat, and you just couldn't start the outboard motors.
Too many in them. Too many in it.
In the sludge. We're in the bottom. We're in the sludge. So we had to out the boats, and we had to push, and it's jet black. Jet black it was. And nobody had a bloody clue where we were. And we had to push the boats, and we're up to here.
Up to his stomach.
So gluttonous mud and water and stuff, and we were walking along and pushing these bloody boats. And it come to a point where they were on about calling it off, actually, from our point of view, from the lake. And eventually, we managed to land. By this time, the stonk had finished, but there wasn't a great deal of action when we first landed. But as we moved in, we had various bridges to take to stop them blowing them, you know. And as we moved forward, so they weren't proper Germans, these weren't. They were a mixture. They were a mixture of troops. I'll tell you the exact name of them, but I found that it was, once you got near them and you opened fire on them, they'd put their hands up and expect to be taken prisoners of war, you see. And they weren't Germans at all, half of them. One of the bridges was blown, but the others were kept intact. And then after that, we moved up, and number 9 had come through and joined us from the south and joined us. And the evening of the third day after the landing, the brigade, having carried out its task of clearing the spit, was relieved by the 24th Guards Brigade.
So when the enemy troops put their hands up to surrender, did you take them prisoner?
Not all of them. If they shot some of your fellows, you'd shoot some of them.
Did you think it was unfair of them to try to surrender under those circumstances?
When you're in a battle, you're carried away. It matters not. I mean, you'd bayonet somebody without caring. I bayoneted a German officer, and he was wounded. And one of my officers, Lieutenant Gooby, who was a new officer to the commando, he went slightly bum happy afterwards. And he was in this hospital, and I had to go in front of the CO because it had preyed on his mind that Sergeant Rudge had been to this German officer when he was wounded.
But was that on the spit?
On the spit. And this is, as I say, during a battle, I mean, you can't control things. I mean, if as in Albania, they're shooting at you until you get on top of them, then they start showing little white flags over the top of a bloody big hole, you sling a bloody 36 grenade and sort them out, because they've been...